around them. This was perfect for our purpose. We were able to stand at a distance and keep watch. Ranger and I were shoulder to shoulder, two professionals doing a job. Problem was, one of the professionals didn't do well at funerals. Funerals made me sad, really sad. And the sadness had nothing to do with the deceased. I got weepy over perfect strangers. The priest stood and repeated the Lord's Prayer, and I felt my eyes well with tears. The tears ran down my cheeks. Ranger turned to me.
Are you okay?
I found a tissue in one of the sweatshirt pockets, and I blew my nose.
I'm fine. I just have this reaction to funerals.
Several people on the outermost ring of mourners glanced our way. Ranger drew me closer.
Babe, we're starting to attract a lot of attention. Could you drop the sobbing down a level?
Ashes to ashes, the priest said. And I totally lost it. I slumped against Ranger and cried. Ranger cradled my face in his hands, using his thumbs to wipe the tears from my eyes.
The ceremony is over. Can you make it back to the car?
I nodded.
I'm okay now. Am I red and blotchy from crying?
Yes,
Ranger said, brushing a kiss across my forehead.
I love you anyway.
There's all kinds of love,
I said. Ranger took me by the hand and led me back to the SUV.
This is the kind that doesn't call for a ring, but a condom might come in handy.
That's not love, I told him. That's lust. He was scanning the crowd as we walked, watching for Spiro.
In this case, there's some of both.
Ranger rolled the engine over and called Tank.
We're heading back. Anything on your end?
The answer was obviously negative because Ranger disconnected and pulled into the stream of traffic.
Tank didn't see any bad guys, but it wasn't a total wash,
Ranger said, handing his cell phone over to me.
I managed to take a picture for you while you were tucked into my jacket.
Ranger had a picture phone, exactly like the one I'd been issued. I went to the album option and brought up four photos of Anthony Baroni. The images were small. I chose one and waited while it filled the screen. Anthony appeared to be talking on his phone. Hold on, he wasn't talking. He was taking a picture. Oh my God, that's so creepy.
Yeah, Ranger said. Either Anthony's really into dead people, or else he's sending photos to someone not fortunate enough to have a front row seat.
Spiro. Maybe. Most of the cars left the cemetery and turned toward the burg. Anthony Baroni peeled away from the herd at Chamber Street. Ranger stuck to him, and we followed him to the store. He parked his vet in the rear and sauntered inside.
Time to stir things up, Ranger said. Let's raise the stakes for Anthony.
Ranger parked in front of the store. There was an old guy behind the counter waiting on a woman who was buying a sponge mop. No other customers. Two of the Baroni brothers were working together, labeling a carton of nails in aisle 4. Anthony Baroni was on his cell phone to the rear of the store. Anthony saw us approaching. He closed his phone and slipped it into his pants pocket. He looked to Ranger and then to me.
Stephanie, man, you were really ballin' at the cemetery. Guess you got real broken up having Mama Melanoma blown to bits in your car.
It was a touching ceremony. Ranger extended his hand.
Carlos Manoso, I don't believe we've met.
Anthony shook Ranger's hand.
Anthony Baroni, what can I do for you? Need a plunger?
Ranger gave him a small, cordial smile.
We thought we'd stop by to say hello and see if Spiro liked the pictures.
What do you mean?
He'll turn on you, Ranger said. You made a bad choice for a partner.
You should talk. Look who you've got for a partner. Little Miss Cry Her Eyes Out.
Anthony rubbed his eyes like he was crying.
Boo-hoo-hoo!
So I punched him. It was one of those bypass-the-brain impulse actions, and it was a real sucker punch. Anthony never saw it coming. He had his hands to his eyes doing the boo-hoo thing, and I guess I threw all my fear and frustration into the punch. I heard his face crunch under my fist, and blood spurted out of his nose. I was so horrified, I froze on the spot. Ranger gave a bark of laughter and dragged me away so I didn't get splattered. Anthony's eyes were wide, his mouth open, his hands clapped over his nose. Ranger shoved a business card into Anthony's shirt pocket.
Call me if you want to talk.
We left the store and buckled ourselves into the Cayenne. Ranger slid a glance my way.
You're a fun date.
Do you really think Spiro and Anthony are partners?
I think it's unlikely.
I left Ranger in the control room and hurried into my cubicle, anxious to finish running the check on Baroni. I finished Baroni, printed his entire file, and dropped it into the drawer with Gorman and Lazar. I entered Jimmy Runyon into the first search program and watched as information rushed onto my screen. I'd been scanning the searches as they appeared, taking notes, trying to find the one thing that bound them together in life and probably in death. So far, nothing had jumped out at me. There were a few things that were common to the men, but nothing significant. They were all approximately the same age. They had all owned small businesses. They were all married. When I finished Runyon, I'd take all the files and read through them more carefully. I was halfway through Runyon when my mom called on my cell.
Where are you?
She wanted to know.
I'm at work. It's 5:30. We're supposed to be at the church for rehearsal. We've been waiting and waiting.
Crap. I forgot.
How could you forget? Your sister's getting married tomorrow.
I'm on my way. Give me 20 minutes.
I'll take your grandmother with me. You can meet us at the church. You just bring Joseph and the cello.
Joseph and the cello, I dumbly repeated.
Everyone's waiting to hear you play.
Crap, crap, and double crap. It took me 12 minutes to get across town to Morelli's house. I locked the SUV in the garage, ran into the house, into the living room.
The wedding rehearsal is tonight, I yelled at Morelli.
Morelli was working his way through a bag of chips.
And?
And we have to be there. We're in the wedding party. I'm the maid of honor. You're the best man.
I ran upstairs and got clothes for Morelli. Slacks, belt, button-down shirt. I ran back downstairs and shoved him into the shirt, and then realized he couldn't get the slacks over the cast. He was wearing gray sweatpants with one leg cut at thigh level.
Okay, the sweats are good enough.
I raced upstairs, and I changed into a skirt and short-sleeve sweater. I grabbed my bag, got Morelli up on his crutches, and maneuvered him to the kitchen door.
I hate to bring this up, Morelli said, but aren't you supposed to take the cello?
The cello. I rapped my head on the wall. Thunk, thunk, thunk. I took a second to breathe. I can do this, I told myself. Probably I can play a little something. How hard can it be? You just do the bowing thing back and forth and sounds come out.
Wait here, I said to Morelli. I'll put the cello in the car and I'll come back to get you.
I ran into the living room and hefted the cello. I carted it into the kitchen, past Morelli, out the door, and crossed the yard with it. I opened the garage door, rammed the cello into the back of the SUV, and returned to the kitchen for Morelli. I helped him into a jacket and helped him navigate through the back door and down the stairs. We started to cross the yard, and the garage exploded with enough force to rattle the windows in Morelli's house. Morelli and I stood there, dumbstruck. His garage had gone up like fireworks and had come down like confetti. Splintered boards, shingles, and assorted car parts fell out of the sky. Morelli's SUV was a fireball. His yard was littered with smoldering junk.
Oh, my God, I said. The cello was in your SUV.
I pumped my fist into the air and did a little dance.
Yes, woohoo!
Morelli gave his head a shake.
Honey, my garage just blew up, and I don't think it was insured. We're supposed to be upset.
Sorry, I'll try to look serious now.
Morelli glanced over at me.
You're still smiling.
I can't help it. I'm just so friggin' relieved to be rid of that cello.
There were sirens screaming from all directions, and the first of the cop cars parked in the alley behind Morelli's house. I borrowed Morelli's cell phone and called my mother.
Bad news, I said. We're going to be late. We're having car trouble. How late? What's wrong with the car?
Real late. There's a lot wrong with the car.
This is a big day, Morelli said.
I was slumped in a kitchen chair, staring at my mug of coffee. It was almost 8 o'clock, and I wasn't looking forward to what lay in front of me. I was going to have to call my mom and tell her about the cello. Then I was going to have to give her the fire details. Then I was going to dress up like an eggplant and walk down the aisle in front of Valerie.
Your big day, too, I said. You're Albert's best man.
Yeah, but I don't have to be a vegetable.
The phone rang. Morelli looked at the caller ID and handed the phone over to me.
Guess who?
Stephanie, my mother said. I have terrible news. It's about your sister. She's gone.
Gone? Gone where?
Disney World. She just called from the airport. She said they were all on a plane. Valerie, the three girls, and Cuddle Umpkins. And they were going to Disney World, and she had to disconnect because they were about to take off.
So, there's no wedding?
No. I'm sorry you didn't get to play the cello for everyone.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
I disconnected and looked across the table at Morelli.
Valerie's going to Disney World.
Good for her, Morelli said. Guess that leaves the rest of the day open.
Last night, Morelli's garage had been cordoned off with crime scene tape, and men were now carefully moving around inside the tape, gathering evidence, photographing the scene. A couple cop cars and crime scene vans were parked in the alley. The house was going to be filled with cops today. Morelli wasn't going to need Nurse Stephanie. I took a shower and dressed in black jeans and a black t-shirt. I grabbed the keys to the Buick and returned to the kitchen to give the good news to Morelli.
I'm going to work. I wasn't able to get through everything yesterday.
Our eyes held, and I guess Morelli decided I was actually going into work and not going into Boff Ranger.
Are you taking the Buick?
Yes.
Let Ryan go over the car before you touch it.
That worked just fine for me. I wasn't in the mood to get exploded. I had three complete files in front of me, Baroni, Gorman, and Lazar. I had Runyon running on the first of the search programs. I had my pad half filled with notes, but so far, nothing had added up to anything resembling a clue. Ranger appeared at my desk and looked down at me.
Aren't you supposed to be in a wedding?
Valerie took off for Disney World.
Alone?
With Albert and the three kids.
Ranger looked over at the thick printouts on my desk.
Files on Baroni, Gorman, and Lazar?
Yes, I'm running Runyon now. I think he fits the profile. If you haven't got anything better to do, you might go over the files for me. Maybe you'll see something I missed.
Ranger slouched in the chair next to me and started with Baroni. I finished Runyon a little after noon. I printed him out and pushed back from my station. Ranger looked over at me. He was on the third file. I was almost done reading Runyon when it hit me, the one possible thing that would tie the four men to each other. I looked over at Ranger and saw that he was watching me. Ranger had seen it too. He was a step ahead of me.
I haven't read Runyon yet, Ranger said. Tell me he was in the army.
He was in the army.
36 years ago, he was stationed at Fort Dix.
Bingo.
A lot of people pass through Fort Dix, Ranger said, but it feels good.
I agreed. It felt good. I'm tired of sitting, I told him. I think we need a field trip.
Babe, you're not going to make me go to the mall, are you?
I was thinking more along the lines of doing some B&E on Anthony's house.
I thought you were out of the B&E business.
Here's the thing. Someone keeps blowing up my cars, and it's getting old.
Ranger slid the files into my file cabinet.
Let's roll. If we're going to break into Anthony's house, we want to do it before the store closes and he comes home.
We rode the elevator to the garage, and Ranger confiscated one of the black Explorers normally set aside for his crew. In 20 minutes, we were parked across the street and two houses down from Anthony Baroni. Ranger cut the engine and dialed Anthony's home number. No answer.
Try the door, he said to me. If someone opens it, tell them you're selling Girl Scout cookies and keep them talking until I call you. I'm going in through the back.
I swung out of the Explorer and watched Ranger drive away. I waited a couple minutes, and then I crossed the street, marched up to Anthony's front door, and rang the bell. Nothing. I rang again and listened. I didn't hear any activity inside. I was about to ring a third time when the door opened and Ranger motioned me in. I followed him to the second floor, and we methodically worked our way through all three levels.
I don't see any evidence of a second person living here, Ranger said when we reached the basement.
This is a real bummer, I said. No books on how to build a bomb, no sniper rifles, no dirty underwear with Spiro embroidered on it.
We were in the kitchen, and only the garage remained. We knew there was something in the garage because Anthony never parked his fancy new vet in the garage.
Ranger drew his gun and opened the door that led to the garage, and we both looked in at wall-to-wall boxes. Never-been-open cartons containing toaster ovens, ceiling fans, nails, duct tape, electric screwdrivers. "I think the little jerk is stealing from his brothers," I said to Ranger.
"I think you're right. Looks like he randomly fills his trunk every night when he leaves."
We backed out and closed the garage door. Ranger looked at his watch.
"We have a little time. Let's see what he's got on his computer."
Anthony had a small office on the first floor. The desk held a phone, a computer and keyboard, and a small printer. Ranger turned the computer on. A strip of icons appeared on the screen. Ranger hit one of the icons, and Anthony's email program opened. Ranger scrolled through new mail and sent mail and deleted mail. Not much there. Anthony didn't do a lot of emailing. Ranger opened Anthony's address book. No Spiro listed.
"Let's see what he surfs," Ranger said.
He went to the bookmarked sites. They were all porn. Ranger closed the program and returned his attention to the icon strip. He hit iPhoto and worked his way through the photo library. There were a couple pictures of Anthony's vet and three photos from the macaroni funeral. The quality wasn't great since they were downloaded from his phone, but the subject matter was clear. He'd been taking pictures of Carol Zambelli's Hooters. Zambelli had just purchased the set and couldn't get her coat closed at Graveside. Ranger shut the computer down.
"Time to get out of here."
We left through the back door and headed back to the office.
"This trip doesn't take Anthony Baroni out of the picture," Ranger said, "but it definitely backburners him."
It was Sunday night. I was restless. Big Blue was at the curb, but I had nowhere to go. The mall was closed. I wasn't up to a visit with my parents. Probably I shouldn't be driving Big Blue anyway. It was sitting at the curb, unprotected. I found a note from Morelli saying he'd gone out to dinner with his brother Tony and his cousin Mooch. There was leftover pizza in the fridge. I ate the pizza and washed it down with a Bud. A couple minutes after 9, Morelli swung in on his crutches. "Did I miss anything important?" I asked Morelli.
"Yeah, I just got a call from Ryan Lasky. He's been working the Baroni case with me. 4 bodies were found in a shallow grave in a patch of woods off Upper Stark this afternoon. Some kids stumbled across it."
Morelli eased himself onto the couch.
"None of the bodies has been officially identified yet, but Lasky's certain one of them is Baroni. The wedding ring matches a description his wife Carla gave when she filed missing persons."
I sat next to Morelli. "Did Lasky know how they were killed?"
"Shot, multiple times. All in the chest, as if they'd been standing together and someone sprayed them with bullets, like in an old Al Capone movie. It's pretty clear that someone called a meeting and executed them."
"They had to have known the gunman," I said. "I can't see any of these men getting in his car and driving off to a meeting on Upper Stark at the request of a stranger."
"I agree. I think they all knew each other, and there was a 5th member of the group who had his own agenda."
"They were all in the same unit at Fort Dix." Morelli turned and looked at me.
"You found that out?"
"Yeah."
"So, not only are you hot, but you're smart, too."
"You think I'm hot?" Morelli had his hand up my shirt, tinkering with my bra.
"Cupcake, I'm not sharing my house with you because you can cook."
Ranger was waiting for me when I arrived at work the next morning. He was in my cubby, slouched in the extra chair, reading through the files on Gorman, Lazar, Baroni, and Runyon.
"As far as Rangeman is concerned, Gorman is found and the file is closed," Ranger said. "If you still think there's a connection between the murdered men and your stalker, and you want to use this office to continue searching, you have permission to do that. Did Silvio show you how to search the newspapers?"
"No."
"Sit down, and I'll show you how to get into the programs. It's tedious work, but it accesses a lot of information. You want to go to the local paper and look for something bad that happened when the 4 men were at Dix. An unsolved murder, a high-stakes robbery, unsolved serial crimes like multiple burglaries."
I sat down and faced the keyboard. "How do I do this?" Ranger pulled a chair next to me. His leg pressed against mine, and when he leaned forward to get to my keyboard, we were shoulder to shoulder, his arm brushing the side of my breast when he typed. He was warm, and he smelled delicious. I felt my eyes glaze over, and I worried I might start panting.
"Earth to babe," Ranger said.
I looked at him and unconsciously licked my lips. After lunch, I went straight into the newspaper search. I limited the search to the last 3 months the men were at Dick's. It seemed to me that was the most likely time frame for them to do something catastrophic. I began with a name search and came up empty. None of the men were mentioned in any of the local papers. My next search was front page. I was only reading headlines, but it was still a slow process. By 5 o'clock, I had a list of crimes that I thought had potential. Nothing sensational, just good, solid crimes like a rash of unsolved burglaries, an unsolved murder, an unsolved hijacking. None of the crimes really grabbed me, and I still had lots of front pages to read, so I decided to keep searching. I called Morelli and told him I was working late.
How late?
I don't know. Does it matter?
Only if you come home with your underwear on backwards.
Anything on Baroni and the three other guys?
They've all been positively identified. You were right about all of them. They were killed on sight. That's it so far.
The next morning, I was dressed in black jeans and black t-shirt, and I was ready for work. I went downstairs and stood at the front door, looking out at Big Blue. Probably perfectly safe, but I didn't feel comfortable taking the chance. There was a good possibility it had been booby-trapped. I called my dad and mooched a ride.
You're doing pretty good on the new job, he said. Almost a week, and nothing's caught fire or blown up.
It'd be a real challenge for Spiro to penetrate Rangeman, and that's probably the reason Morelli's garage got destroyed. Spiro went for what was available.
They're holding a memorial service for Michael Baroni today,
my father said.
Your mother said to tell you she's taking your grandmother. It's being held at Steva's. Ordinarily, they'd hold it at the church, but Steva and Baroni were old friends, and I guess Steva gave the Baronis a discount if they held the service in his chapel.
I didn't realize Steva and Baroni were that close.
Yeah, me either. I didn't see them spending a lot of time together. But then that happens when you got a big family and a business to run. You lose touch with your buddies.
I had a chill run up my spine. How'd Steva and Baroni get to be friends? I asked, my heart skipping beats.
They were in the army together. They were both at Dick's.
I might have the fifth man. I was so excited I was hyperventilating. Now here's the thing. Why was I so excited? Ranger had his FTA, so the excitement didn't come from case closure. I barely knew Baroni, and I didn't know the other three men at all, so there was nothing personal. My original long jump tying Anthony Baroni to Spiro and the missing men proved to be groundless. So why did I care? The four missing men seemed to be completely unrelated to anything I'd care about. And even if Spiro did turn out to have a tie to the four men, even if there was a crime involved, it really didn't matter to me, did it? Finding Spiro and stopping the harassment was really the only thing that mattered, right? Okay. Maybe I was excited about the fifth man because it might be Constantine Steva. And if Khan was involved, then Spiro might be involved. So was this why I couldn't wait to plug Khan's name into the search program? I didn't think so. I suspected the hard reality was that it all just came down to tasteless curiosity. I was a product of the Berg. I had to know all the dirt. My dad pulled up to the front of the building, and I jumped out. Thanks, I yelled, hitting the ground running. I got my computer up and running and punched Constantine Steva into the newspaper search program. A single article appeared. It was small and on page 13. Private First Class Constantine Steva had been injured in his attempt to thwart a robbery. A government armored truck carrying payroll had been hijacked when it had stopped for a routine gate check at Fort Dix. Steva had been on guard duty along with two other men. Steva was the only guard to survive. He'd been shot in the leg. There'd been no mention of the amount of money involved, and there weren't a lot of details on the hijacking, other than a few brief sentences that the truck had been recovered. I called Ranger on his cell and got a message. I left my cubby and went to the console that monitored Rangeman cars. Where's Ranger? I asked Hal. He's not answering his cell.
He's on a plane. He had to bring an FTA up from Miami. He'll be back tonight.
Hal tapped Ranger's number into his computer, and a screen changed and brought Ranger's car up. Philadelphia Airport.
He should be on the ground in 3 hours. His cell will come back on then.
I went back to my cubby, and I called Morelli. I might know the fifth guy. It might be Constantine Steva. He was at Dick's when Baroni was there.
They were army buddies.
I can't imagine Khan in the army,
Morelli said.
I can't imagine him ever being anything other than a funeral director.
It gets even stranger. He was on guard duty, and he was shot during an armored car hijacking.
How do you know all this?
I've been searching newspapers. I know it's stupid, but I just have this feeling everything fits somehow. Like, maybe the four missing men were involved in the armored car hijacking and Khan recognized them.
Then it would seem to me Khan should be the one in the shallow grave.
Yes, but suppose Khan told Spiro, and Spiro came back and was extorting money from the four men. And then when he didn't think he could get any more, he shot them.
It's a lot of supposing, Morelli said.
I went to the kitchen, got coffee with milk, no sugar, and went back to my desk and started working my way through the search requests. I called Morelli at noon. How's it going?
I talked to Khan, Morelli told me. He said the army tried to keep the armored truck robbery as quiet as possible. The two guards that Khan was working with were shot and killed. Khan said he was alive because he fainted when he got shot in the leg, and he supposed the hijackers thought he was dead. He couldn't identify any of the hijackers. They were all wearing masks.
Did he say how much money was involved?
He didn't know.
Did you ask him if he thought Baroni might have been involved in that hijacking?
Yeah. He looked at me like I was on drugs.
Did Spiro know about the hijacking?
Spiro knew his dad was shot. Khan said there was a time when Spiro was a kid, and he was sort of obsessed with it. Kept the newspaper article in a scrapbook.
I hung up and went back to my searches, but I couldn't keep my mind on them. I was getting double vision from looking at the computer, and I was tired of sitting in the cubby. I pushed away from my desk and grabbed the key fob. I need to get some air, I told Hal. I won't be gone long. When I pushed away from my desk, I didn't have a direction in mind. By the time I'd reached the garage, I knew where I was going. I was going to the memorial service. I got to Steva's exactly at 1 o'clock. Latecomers were hunting parking places and hustling up to the big front porch. I zipped into the lot and parked on a patch of grass, separating the lot from the drive-through lane for the hearse and the flower car. Steva had a chapel on the first floor to the rear of the building. When there was a large crowd, he opened the doors and seated the overflow on folding chairs in the wide hallway. Today was standing room only. Since I was one of the last to arrive, I was far down the hall, catching the service over the speaker system. I wandered away after 15 minutes and peeked in some of the other rooms. I tiptoed into Khan's office. He'd left the door open. It was an announcement that he had nothing to hide. If you can't trust your undertaker, who can you trust, eh? I don't ordinarily do recreational mortuary tours, and I'd absolutely believed Khan when he said he hadn't seen Spiro, so I wasn't sure why I felt compelled to search the building. I guess it just wasn't adding up for me. I kept coming back to the mole. It had been made from mortician's putty. Steva doesn't run the only funeral home in the greater Trenton area, and for that matter, you can probably order mortician's putty on the net. Still, this was the easiest and most logical place for Spiro to get a chunk of the stuff. I had a feeling that if I opened enough doors here, I'd find Spiro, or at least some evidence that Spiro had passed through. I went upstairs and checked out the storage room and the two additional viewing rooms Khan reserved for peak periods, like the week after Christmas. I returned to the ground level. The chapel was at the end of a short corridor. The embalming rooms were in the new wing, to my left. These rooms were added after the fire. I took a deep breath and turned left. I'd gone this far, I should finish the search. I tested the door that led to the new wing. Locked. Gee, too bad. Guess God doesn't want me to see the embalming rooms. Khan lived in a house that sat next to the mortuary. It was a good-sized Victorian, twice the size of my parents' house. Spiro had grown up in that house. I'd never been inside. I went out through the back door and followed the walkway to Khan's house. I stepped up onto the small back porch that sheltered the kitchen door. I looked in the windows. The kitchen was dark, nothing out of place. No dirty dishes on the counter, no cereal boxes, no sweatshirt draped over a chair. I stood very still and listening. Nothing, just the beating of my heart, which seemed frighteningly loud. I tried the door. Locked. I worked my way around the side of the house. No open windows. I returned to the back of the house and looked up at the second floor. An open window. People felt safe leaving windows open on the second floor, and most of the time they were safe. But not this time. This window was over the little back porch, and I was good at climbing up back porches. When I was in high school, my parents' back porch had been my main escape route when I was grounded, and I was grounded a lot. "Stephanie, Stephanie, Stephanie," I said to myself, "this is insane. You're obsessed with this Spiro thing. There's no good reason to believe you'll find anything helpful in Khan's house. What if you get caught? How embarrassing will that be?" Then the stupid Stephanie spoke up. "Yes, but I won't get caught," the stupid Stephanie said. "Everyone's at the memorial service, and it'll go on for another half hour at least." The smart Stephanie didn't have an answer to that, so the stupid Stephanie shimmied up the porch railing and climbed through the second-story window and dropped into the bathroom. The bathroom was blindingly antiseptic. The towels were perfectly folded and lined up on the towel bar. There was no scum in the soap dish. I took a quick peek in the medicine cabinet. Just the usual over-the-counter stuff you'd expect to find. I walked through the three upstairs bedrooms, looking in closets and drawers and under beds. I went downstairs and walked through the living room, dining room, and den. The house was eerily unlived in. No wrinkles on the pillowcases, and all the clothes hanging in the closet and folded in the chest were perfectly pressed. Just like Khan, I thought. Lifeless and perfectly pressed. Constantine Steva was surrounded by grieving people every night, left alone with the dead by day, and went home to this sterile house after the evening viewings. And if we're to believe him, he has a son who came back to the Berg, but never stopped by to say hello. I opened the door to the cellar, switched the light on, and cautiously crept down the stairs. Eureka! This was the room I'd been looking for. It was a windowless basement room that had been made into a do-it-yourself apartment. There was a couch covered by a rumpled sleeping bag and pillow, a television, a comfy chair that had seen better days. At the far end, someone had installed a sink and a makeshift counter. There was a hot plate on the counter, and there was a small under-the-counter refrigerator. This was the perfect hiding hole for Spiro. There was a door next to the refrigerator. Bathroom, I thought. I opened the door and looked around the room. I'd expected to find a small bathroom. What I had in front of me was a mortician's workroom. Two long tables covered with tubes of paint, artist brushes, a couple large plastic containers of mortician's modeling clay, wigs and hair pieces, trays of cosmetics, jars of replacement teeth, and on a chair in the corner was a jacket and hat. Spiro's. I had my cell phone clipped to my belt alongside my gun. I unclipped the phone and went to dial. No service in the basement. I was on my way through the door when a flash of color caught my eye. It was a rubbery blob that looked a lot like uncooked bacon. I moved closer and realized it was several pieces of the material morticians used for facial reconstruction. Steva was a genius when it came to reconstructing the dead. He added fullness to the cheeks, smoothed over wrinkles, tucked away excess skin. He filled in bullet holes, added teeth, covered bruises, straightened noses when necessary. Spiro had watched his father at work and would know the same techniques. The pieces of plastic lying on the table reminded me of Spiro's scars, and I realized Spiro would have the ability to change his appearance. A perfectly healthy Spiro could make himself horribly disfigured. He wouldn't fool anyone up close, but I'd only seen him at a distance, in a car. If I was, in fact, looking at a disguise, it was pretty darn creepy. I heard movement behind me, and I turned to find Khan standing in the doorway.
"How'd you get in here?" he asked. "The doors to the house were closed and locked."
"The back door was open. When in a jam, always go with the fib. Is the service done?"
"No. I came back here because you tripped my alarm."
"I didn't hear it."
"It rings in my office. It monitors the cellar door, among others."
"You're hiding Spiro," I said. I recognized the coat and hat on the chair. "I'm sorry. This must be awful for you." Khan looked at me, his eyes completely devoid of emotion.
"You haven't figured it out, have you? There's no Spiro. Spiro is dead. He died in the fire. There was nothing left of him but ashes and his school ring."
"I thought he was never found. There was never a service."
"He wasn't found. There wasn't anything left of him. Just the ring. I stumbled across it and never said anything. I didn't want a service. I wanted to move on, to rebuild my business."
If he'd lived, he would have ruined me anyway. He was a moron.
This was the first I'd ever heard Khan speak badly of the dead, and it was of his son. I didn't know what to say. It was true, Spiro was a moron, but it was chilling to hear it from Khan. And if Spiro was dead, then who was tormenting me? Who blew up Mama Macaroni? I suspected the answer was standing 2 feet away, but I couldn't put it together. I couldn't imagine solicitous Constantine Steva, Mr. No Personality, offing Mama Mac. So it wasn't Spiro who was leaving me notes and blowing up cars. It was you.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Why? Why were you stalking me?
Why doesn't matter, Khan said. Let's just say you're serving a purpose. I guess it's just as well that you're here. I don't have to hunt you down.
Khan lunged forward, and I saw the glint of metal in his hand, and I barely registered stun gun before I went out. I was in absolute blackness when I came around. My mind was working, but my body was slow to respond, and I couldn't see. I was cuffed and shackled, and I was blindfolded. No, I thought, back up. I wasn't blindfolded. I could open and close my eyes. It was just very, very dark. And silent. And stuffy. I tried to sit, but couldn't raise my head more than a couple inches. The space around me was minimal. The realization of confinement sent a shock of panic into my chest. I was in a silk-lined container. God help me, Constantine Steva had put me in one of his caskets. My heart was pounding and my mind was in free fall. This couldn't be real. Khan was the heart and soul of the Berg. No one would ever suspect Khan of bad things. My hands ached from the cuffs and I couldn't breathe. I heard a door slam and an engine catch. The casket shifted. I was pretty sure I was being driven somewhere. I hoped it wasn't the cemetery. I strained to hear voices. If I heard voices, I'd make noise. I seemed to have air, but I didn't want a chance depleting the oxygen if I didn't hear voices. We stopped, and a door opened and slammed shut, and then I was sliding and bumping along. I'd been to a lot of funerals with Grandma Mazur. I knew what this was. I was moving on the casket gurney. I was out of the hearse or the truck or whatever, and I was being taken somewhere. I was wheeled around corners, and then the motion stopped. Nothing happened for what seemed like years, and finally the lid was raised, and I blinked up at Khan.
Good. You're still alive. Didn't die of fright, eh?
He looked in at me.
Undertaker humor.
My first thought was that I wouldn't cry. I'd keep him talking. I'd stall for time. If I had enough time, Ranger would find me. I just hoped he'd get to me in time.
I need to get out of this casket. I need to use the bathroom. Bad.
Khan was fastidious to a fault, and he looked genuinely horrified at the possibility of a woman peeing in one of his silk-lined caskets. He cranked the gurney down to floor level and helped me wriggle myself out of the box.
This is the way it will work, he said. I'm going to release one cuff, but I'll stun gun you if you do anything dumb.
It took a moment to get my balance, and then I very carefully shuffled into the bathroom. When I shuffled out, I felt a lot better. My hands were no longer numb, and the cramps in my legs had subsided. We were in a house that looked like a small 70s ranch. It was sparsely furnished with mix-and-match hand-me-downs. The kitchen linoleum was old, and the paint was faded. Some of the over-the-counter kitchen cabinets were open, and I could see they were empty. Is this in retaliation for Spiro's death or the fire in the funeral home? I asked Khan.
Only tangentially. It's a bonus. There have been a couple nice bonuses to this charade. I got to kill Mama Macaroni. Who wouldn't love to do that? And then I got to bury her. Life doesn't get much better. The Macaronis bought the top-of-the-line slumber bed.
I cut my eyes to my slumber bed.
Sorry, Khan said. Molded plastic, not one of my better caskets. Still, it's good quality for people who haven't set aside funeral expenses. I'd like to put your grandmother in one of these. Her death should be declared a national holiday. What is this morbid obsession she has with the dead? I have to nail the lid down when there's a closed casket, and she's never happy with the cookies.
Khan smiled.
Maybe I'll nail your lid down just to annoy her. That would be fun.
So I guess that means you're not going to bury me alive?
No. If I buried you alive, I'd have to put you back in the casket. And I have plans for the casket. Mary Oleski is on a table back at the mortuary, and she'll be on view in that casket tomorrow. I have a better plan. I'm going to hack you up and leave you here on the kitchen floor. It's important to my plan that you're found in this house.
Why?
This house belongs to Spiro. It's tied up in probate because he hasn't been pronounced dead. If Spiro killed you, it would be in this house, don't you think?
You still haven't told me why you want to kill me.
It's a long story.
Are we in a rush?
Khan looked at his watch. No. As a matter of fact, I'm ahead of schedule. I'm coordinating this with the last of the Spiro sightings. Spiro will be seen in his car around midnight, and then I'll come back here and kill you, and Spiro will disappear forever.
I don't get the Spiro tie-in. I don't get anything.
This is about a crime that happened a long time ago, 36 years to be exact. I was stationed at Fort Dix, and I masterminded a hijacking. I had four friends who helped me. Michael Baroni, Louis Lazar, Ben Gorman, and Jim Runyon.
The four men who were found shot to death behind the farmer's market?
Yes, an unfortunate necessity.
I wouldn't have pegged you for a criminal mastermind.
I have many unappreciated talents. For instance, I'm quite good as an actor. I play the role of the perfect undertaker each night. And, as you know, I'm a genius with makeup. All I needed was a hat and a jacket, some colored contacts and handmade scars, and I was able to fool you.
So you masterminded a hijacking?
I saw the trucks come through once a week, and I knew how easy it would be to take one of them down on that isolated back station. Lazar was a munitions expert. I learned everything I know about bombs from Lazar. Gorman had been stealing cars since he was 9. Gorman stole the tow truck we used to drag the armored truck away. Baroni had all kinds of connections to launder the money. Runyon was the dumb muscle. It was so simple. I was on guard duty with two other men. The armored truck pulled up. Runyon and Lazar were directly behind it in a car. Lazar had already planted the bomb when the truck stopped for lunch. Kaboom! The bomb went off and disabled the truck. Runyon killed the other two guards on duty and shot me in the leg. Then Gorman hooked the truck up to the tow truck and hauled it off about a quarter mile down the road into an abandoned barn. I wasn't there, of course, but they told me Lazar set a charge that opened the truck like he'd used a can opener. They killed the truck guards, and in a matter of minutes were miles away and $7 million richer.
And no one ever solved the crime?
No. The army expended so much energy hushing it all up that there wasn't a lot of energy left to investigate. They didn't want anyone to know the extent of the loss. That was very big money back then.
What happened to the money?
There were 5 of us. We each took $200,000 as seed money for startup businesses when we got out. And we agreed that every 10 years we take another $200,000 apiece until we hit the 40-year mark, and then we divide up what was left.
So?
We had a vault in the mortuary basement. We had a system that each of us had a number, and it took all of us to open the vault. No one knew, but over the years I'd figured out the numbers. So I borrowed from the vault from time to time. Then you and your grandmother burned my business down. The vault survived, but I didn't. I was underinsured, so I took what was left in the vault and used it to rebuild. 2 months ago, Baroni found out he had colon cancer and asked for his share of the money. He wanted to make sure it went to his family. We set the meeting up in the field behind the farmer's market so we could take a vote. I knew they were going to give Baroni the money, and they were going to want their share early, too. We were all at that age, heart disease, irritable bowel, everyone wants to take a cruise, live the good life, buy a new car. They were going to go down to my basement, open the vault, find out I'd stolen the money, and then they would have killed me.
So you killed them?
Yes. Death isn't such a big deal when it's happening to someone else.
How do I fit in?
You're my insurance policy. Just in case one of my comrades shared the secret with a wife and she came looking for me, maybe with the police. I would confess to telling Spiro about the crime. Of course, it would be my version of the crime and I'd be non-culpable. Easy to believe Spiro would return to extort money and then resort to mass murder.
and easy to believe Spiro would be a little goofy and take to stalking you. And I'd be the poor, grieving father of the little bastard.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
You fell for it, Khan said. Actually, my original plan was just to leave you a few notes. Then I realized you'd made so many enemies you might not consider Spiro as the stalker, so I had to get more elaborate. Probably I could have stopped after you identified me at Cluck in a Bucket, but by that time I was addicted to the rush of the game. It's too bad I have to kill you. It would have been fun to blow up more cars. I really like blowing up cars.
He was crazy. He'd inhaled too much embalming fluid.
You won't get away with it.
I think I will. Everyone loves me. I'm above suspicion.
You're insane. You blew up Mama Macaroni.
I couldn't resist.
What about Joe? Why did you run him over?
It was an accident. I was trying to get home, and I couldn't get rid of you and your idiot grandmother. I hit the curb and lost control of the car. Too bad I didn't kill him. That was a slow week.
Shades were drawn in the house. I looked around for a clock.
It's almost 10, Khan said. I need to have Spiro seen one last time driving the car that will be found in this garage. Sadly, it will be my final Spiro performance. And your body will be found in the kitchen. Horribly mutilated, of course. It seems like Spiro's style. He had a flair for the dramatic.
He held the stun gun up for me to see.
Do you want me to stun you before I put you away? Or will you cooperate?
What do you mean, put me away?
I want you to be freshly killed after Spiro is seen driving the car, so I'm going to have to put you on ice for a couple hours.
I cut my eyes to the casket. I really didn't want to go back in the casket.
No, Khan said, not the casket. I need to get that back to the mortuary.
He was looking around.
I need to find something that will keep you out of sight. Something I can lock.
He turned and looked at me with his pale, pale eyes. I saw his hand move. I heard something sizzle in my head. And everything was black. My mouth was dry and my fingertips were tingling. The jerk had zapped me again and stuffed me into something. I was on my back, and I was curled up fetus style. No light, no room to stretch my legs. My arms were pinned under me, and the cuffs were cutting into my wrists. No satin lining this time. I was pretty sure I was crammed into some sort of wooden box. And suddenly, there was a very slim, faint sliver of light in my box. I went still and listened with every molecule in my body. Someone had turned a light on. Or maybe it was daylight. Or maybe I was going to heaven. There were muffled sounds and men's voices, and there was a lot of door banging. I opened my mouth to yell for help, but the box opened before I had the chance. I tumbled out and fell into Ranger's arms. He was as stunned as I was. He had a vice-like grip on my arms, holding me up. The line of his mouth was tight.
I saw you folded up in there, and I thought you were dead.
I'm okay, just cramped. I'd been stuffed into one of the empty over-the-counter cabinets. How Khan had gotten me up there was a mystery. I guess when you're motivated, you find strength. Ranger had come in with Tank and Hal. Tank was at my back with a handcuff key, and Hal was working on the shackles. It's not Spiro, I said. It's Khan, and he's coming back to kill me. If we hang around, we can catch him. Ranger raised my bruised and bloody wrist to his mouth and kissed it.
I'm sorry to have to do this to you, but there's no we. I've just had 6 really bad hours looking for you. I need to know you're safe. Sitting in this house waiting for a homicidal undertaker doesn't feel safe.
And he clamped the handcuff back on my wrist, and the other bracelet went on Tank's wrist.
Take her back to Morelli, Ranger told Tank.
I dug my heels in.
No way!
Ranger looked at Tank.
I don't care how you do it. Just get her out of here and keep her safe. And I don't want those bracelets to come off either of you until you hand her over to Morelli.
Hal drove, and Tank and I sat him back in the Explorer. How did you find me? I asked Tank.
It was Ranger.
That was it. 3 words. I knew he could talk. Hal jumped in from the front seat.
Ranger had every range man employee and 20 contract workers out looking for you. We knew you disappeared at Steva's because I was monitoring your vehicle. Tank and me started looking for you before Ranger even landed. You told me you were coming back, and I got worried.
You were worried about me?
No, I was worried Ranger would kill me if I lost you.
He shot me a look in the rearview mirror.
Well, yeah, maybe I was a little worried about you too.
I was worried, Hank said. I like you.
Hot damn. I leaned into him and smiled, and he smiled back at me.
We went through the funeral home, and we went through the undertaker's home,
Hal said.
And then Ranger figured they might own property someplace else, so he got the old lady in the tax records to open the office. She found that little ranch house under Spiro's name. It was all tied up because Spiro was never declared dead.
40 minutes later, I got dropped off at Morelli's. Tank walked me to the door and unlocked the cuffs.
She's in your care, Tank said to Morelli. If Ranger asks, you can tell him I unlock the cuffs in front of you. Do you want me to sign for her?
Morelli asked on a smile.
Not necessary, Tank said, but I'm holding you responsible.
I ruffled Bob's head and slipped past Morelli. He shut the door.
Ranger called and told me you were safe and on your way here, but he wouldn't tell me anything else.
Ranger was going to take Steva down, and he didn't want anything going wrong. He didn't want to lose Steva. He wanted to do the takedown himself without a lot of police muddying the water. I accidentally got lost trying to find the memorial service and happened to stumble into Khan's personal workroom. I tripped an alarm and Khan found me snooping.
I'm guessing he wasn't happy about you snooping.
It turns out Spiro's dead. Khan needed a scapegoat and decided Spiro was the ghost for the job. So Khan's been going around in mortician's makeup looking like a scarred Spiro.
Why did Khan need a scapegoat?
I told Morelli about the hijacking and the money missing from the vault, and I told him about the mass murder. Morelli was grinning.
Let me get this straight. In the beginning, you basically made all the wrong assumptions about Anthony's involvement in Spiro's identity. And yet, at the end, you solved the crime.
Yeah.
Fucking amazing.
Anyway, Steva locked me up in a casket and took me somewhere to kill me. He left so he could do one last Spiro impersonation, and while he was gone, Ranger found me.
And Ranger's waiting for him to return?
Yep. I looked at Bob. Has he been out?
Only in the yard.
I'll take him for a short walk. I went to the kitchen and got Bob's leash. And while I was at it, I pocketed the keys to the Buick. I was feeling left out, and I was feeling pissed off. I wanted to be part of the takedown, and I wanted to release some anger on Steva. I'd quit my job in an effort to normalize my life, and he'd sabotaged my plan. Of course, he'd done some good things, too, like blowing up Mama Macaroni and sending my cello to cello heaven. Still, it was small compensation for mowing Joe down and stuffing me into a casket. I snapped the leash on Bob, took him out the front door, and loaded him into the Buick. Morelli wouldn't be happy when he heard the Buick drive off, but I couldn't risk telling him I was going back to help Ranger. Morelli would never let me go. I'd paid attention when we left the little ranch house where I'd been held captive, and in 15 minutes, I was back in the neighborhood. I cruised by the house. It was dark. Half a block away, I spotted the Explorer. Hal and Tank were in the house with Ranger. I backed the Buick into a dark driveway directly across from the little ranch. I sat with the motor running and my lights off. Bob was panting in the back seat, snuffling his nose against the window. Bob liked being part of an adventure. After 10 minutes, a green sedan came down the street. The car passed under a streetlight, and I could see Steva behind the wheel. He was wearing the hat and fake scars. He turned into the ranch house driveway and stopped. The garage door started to slide up. This was my moment. I stomped my foot down on the gas and roared across the street, slamming into the back of the green sedan. I caught it square, sending it crashing through the bottom half of the garage door. Bob was barking and jumping around in the back seat. Bob loved destruction. So what do you think? I asked Bob. Should we hit him again?
Roof, roof, roof.
I backed up and rammed the green sedan a second time. Ranger and Tank ran out of the house, guns drawn. Hal came 5 steps behind them. I backed up about 10 feet and got out. I inspected the Buick. Hard to get a good look in the dark, but I couldn't see any damage by the light of the moon. The green sedan was completely smashed. Steam hissed from the radiator, and liquid was pooling under the car. Steva was fighting the airbag. I took Bob out of the back seat and walked him around on Spiro's front lawn so he could tinkle. I was thinking I'd move back into my apartment tomorrow, and maybe I'd get a cello. Not that I needed it. I was pretty darned interesting without it. Ranger was standing hands on hips, watching me. I feel better now, I said.
Babe.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.